We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
With not knowing where things are going to stand with the economy going forwards, obviously we've had a couple of good months as the economy starts to reopen. Obviously, retail sales have been, you know, doing very well. And I think that's the hope going forwards. And that's how retailers are planning. But I think they are being a little bit cautious.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. The early weeks of the pandemic led consumers to experience unprecedented supply shortages and retailers to experience delays in essential inventory that was in high demand. With the holidays just around the corner, how will the ongoing pandemic affect what has traditionally been retailers' busiest time of the year? And what are retailers doing to diversify sourcing options to reduce supply chain disruptions? In a previous episode with experts from PwC, we discussed how retailers can leverage demand sensing to predict consumer trends that will determine sales. This week, we are going a step further to look at how retailers are making decisions about what kinds of items to have in stock and other areas for investment. John Gold is the Vice President of Supply Chain and Customs Policy at the National Retail Federation. And today, he joins the Retail Gets Real podcast to discuss how supply chain and customs issues are impacting the industry and how retailers are responding. John Gold, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. And my colleague, my co-host, and my friend, Susan Retta, how are you?
Doing well and happy to be here. This is going to be a great topic.
It is. And because it's, I mean, there's so much uncertainty these days. I mean, you just don't know how people are responding, reacting, what retailers are doing to respond to that response, to respond to that reaction. I mean, it's wild. We've never had anything like this before. And so, you know, as we approach the holidays, and we've been talking about this a lot, this is going to be historic in so many different ways. And so, John, normally retailers, they bring in their Christmas inventory. They buy it, you know, almost a year in advance, don't they?
Yeah, Bill, that's correct. I think, you know, typically retailers are buying their holiday merchandise, you know, anywhere from 6, 9, 12 months out, making their preparations and planning. You know, this, we are in the midst of the peak shipping season when retailers are bringing in their holiday merchandise. You know, it typically runs August, September, October, into November. I think that season has certainly been lengthened as retailers now are looking at all the uncertainty that's still before them. So it's certainly been a challenge, as you noted, and I think it's going to continue to be a challenge as we look at the rest of the year and what to expect, which is, we don't know. So it's how do you plan with not knowing where things are going to stand with the economy going forwards? Obviously, we've had a couple of good months as the economy starts to reopen. Obviously, retail sales have been, you know, doing very well. And I think that's the hope going forwards. And that's how retailers are planning. But I think they are being a little bit cautious.
A quick question for you. I got a lot of quick questions. And I'm sure Susan does too. But anyway, China and supply chain. And they were shut down for a period of months as well. Their factories were not operating. How has that impacted timing and actual inventory?
Sure. I mean, obviously, all the issues related to China have had a significant impact on supply chain. And that's, you know, going back a couple of years now since we've been engaged in the ongoing tariff and trade war with China. So, you know, even prior to COVID, retailers were looking to diversify their supply chains, looking to shift what they could out of China. But we all know that that's not that's not simple to do. It's not easy. It takes time, months, if not years, to reestablish those supply chains and find new vendors that can meet all of your requirements, your needs, your capacity, meet all of your, you know, everything you need, as well as any government regulations that are there. But as you noted, when, you know, China basically shut down in January, I mean, the only good thing on the timing was that it was during the Lunar New Year holiday. So it was expected that China was going to be shut down at least for a couple of weeks. But when coronavirus hit and that lengthened, that certainly did some serious disruption to retail supply chains as they were trying to figure out, you know, how they're getting the merchandise, when they were getting it, when it was going to arrive. And then as we saw the virus spread, you know, across the globe, that started to affect other markets as well. And you had other markets that were shutting down that retailers rely on. And then obviously once, you know, it hit here in the US and spread, that had a whole different experience impacting retailers, not just on their supply chains, but just on, you know, as we all know, their store operations, which was significant.
At this point, are lead times kind of catching up with inventory needs, or is there still a gap?
I think they've caught up. I mean, I haven't heard from many members. They're still having issues on, you know, factory openings and not getting their supply. I think there's just, you know, there's an ongoing issue of just the factory's ability to operate. As everybody's recovering from coronavirus, as everybody's getting back up and running, those issues are lingering. Obviously, we've heard a lot of issues on dealing with trade credit and ability to pay vendors and things like that. So those are all coming into play now as well, is how are you dealing with your vendor base, and how are you making sure that they're whole and they can actually operate like they were prior to COVID?
Yeah, those finance shortfalls are real and scary.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge issue, not just with your, you know, the vendors that are making your goods, but it's also the transportation providers you're relying on as well. Your carriers, the air carriers, trucking, rail. I mean, this hit so many different segments of the supply chain that everybody's now trying to dig out and, you know, get themselves right. And it's, you know, this is where the strength of the partnerships is really critical throughout the supply chain.
You know, one of the other things that we're looking at, and I think it's being talked a lot about, is as we go into the holiday season, the stress that that is going to put on the delivery system. So, you know, you look at where you normally retail sales during the holidays online counts for about 12%. And this year they're predicting double that. And so you think about what that means in terms of the boxes that are going out that are having to be shipped, and how are they prepared for this, or are they prepared for this? I mean, who would have thunk?
I mean, Bill, I think you're absolutely right. I think we've already seen some of the stress on the system, you know, during the basically economic shutdown, where you saw e-commerce sales, you know, double, triple, if not quadruple, especially for those that were deemed non-essential. And that was their only way to stay in business, and we certainly saw numerous delays in the ability for folks to get products as a result of that. And I think that shows the stress on the system, the lack of capacity that is currently there to handle the e-commerce volumes. I think there's a lot of concern going forwards. And I think, you know, I know some folks are concerned with the announced rate increases we've seen from some of the delivery companies, including even the Postal Service is looking at increasing package delivery rates. And for a lot of folks, it's, you know, I think they're willing to pay if the service is there. But if the service isn't there, if your two-day delivery turns into two-week delivery, what are you paying the additional cost for? So I think we all recognize that those costs, unfortunately, might get passed along to the end consumer. And at this point, you know, right now we don't need to be increasing costs on consumers. We still have extremely high unemployment. The numbers are getting better, but there are still a lot of folks that are not employed right now. And if Congress doesn't come back and pass, you know, additional COVID relief legislation that addresses some of the unemployment insurance gaps, you know, that might hit folks going into the holiday season. We certainly hope that's not the case. But, you know, anything we can do to prevent increasing costs on consumers is what we need to focus on right now.
One of the things that we've been talking about for a little bit now are the idea of dark stores. And then it's like about a week or two ago, the rumor that Amazon might take over some of the empty space in malls that were previously owned by department stores as fulfillment centers. Ostensibly, these would move product closer to the consumer and thus get it into their hands more quickly. But I don't know if that could really be effective for this holiday season. There's not that many dark stores, and certainly the Amazon move won't happen. It's even just rumored. So,
yeah, I mean, Susan, I agree. I mean, I think it's going to take some time for that to work out. I don't think it's going to happen quick enough for this holiday season. But I think the one thing that everybody has been looking at is kind of the reimagination of their supply chains throughout this, you know, this past 6 months. You know, trying to recognize how best to get the good to the consumer where they are. So, you know, we've seen the explosion of the curbside pickup and buy online, pickup in store. You know, for those stores that were shut down because they were non-essential, how do they reimagine the store as kind of that warehouse and distribution center? So I think there's a lot of that, going on, looking at, again, how do they reimagine their supply chain as a whole and trying to make sure they have the goods as close to the end customer as they need to be with that reimagination. So, you know, obviously there are, you know, company like Amazon can look at a mall or other kind of dark store as using that leverage. And I think other companies are looking to do that as well. I mean, we all hear about, at least I keep hearing about stories, at least especially in kind of the LA Long Beach area, that they're out of warehouse space. So where are you looking now to find additional space for to store product, especially yeah. in these high, you know, times like the holiday season where you've got this just massive rush that you've got to store your product?
That was exactly going to be my next question, which is the warehouses. I mean, it's so, you know, the pandemic hit, things, you know, started to go, you know, sideways in March, but product was still coming in. And, you know, there was product coming in for the next season and the stores were closed. Most, you know, when you think about it, certainly the apparel, where is that now? I mean, where do they put that when they've got Christmas coming in and winter coming in on top of that?
That Bill, I mean, that's a great question. I think that's what everybody is struggling with. I mean, I don't want to say the funny thing is, but you know, the government, when they were doing their definition of essential versus non-essential, obviously they identified the supply chain as essential, you know, which is great. You can move your product, but if you can't move it from the distribution to the store, what's the point of having being defined as essential? Right. For those retailers that can't move their goods in the end of the day.
Right.
So I think there are a lot of questions about, you know, how retailers are dealing with that excess inventory right now. You know, I've heard from some retailers that some are donating it to charity because they've missed that entire selling season. Others are storing it away, hopefully that it'll sell in the next selling season. Right. Some have done deep discounts. I think there's, you know, a variety of options that retailers are looking at, but that certainly was one of the biggest challenges. You know, that entire selling season that was missed essentially because we were shut down from, you know, March through May basically. So a lot of the Easter merchandise that was going to move ended up not moving, and that's going to be, you know, hopefully held until next year. But that certainly poses a challenge, especially for those retailers that are having those ongoing liquidity issues, is how do you address the excess inventory that's now sitting that you can't move?
This may sound like a strange question, but thinking about the ports and thinking about what was designated as essential, were they moving product in that was food-based and paper-based and, you know, those CPG goods ahead of other product, or did it all just land in the ports and everybody had to figure it out?
It basically all landed in the ports, and I mean they had to figure it out. I mean, obviously they know what's coming in and they know how to move things. They tried to prioritize when there were, you know, things like PPE. You know, that's what they wanted to do priority, so they were able to. You can track and trace and know kind of what's coming in, what's in the containers.
They needed to prioritize toilet paper. They failed.
Yeah,
they failed miserably.
Well, that's a whole another story on toilet paper.
I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, but. You know, obviously the ports, it was critical for them to be deemed essential, which they were. And they just continued to move product that came in. But, you know, we did see imports tail off significantly, you know, throughout the crisis in the early part. And, you know, March, April, May, imports dipped significantly from where they were and what we had forecasted. But obviously we did our forecast in early right. January before the virus, you know, really took hold. And then as we saw the impact, you know, that's when you saw the impact across all markets. And, you know, that's why you saw numbers drop significantly. I think, you know, some of the numbers were back down in lowest we've seen in 4 years. But, you know, thankfully, we're starting to see those numbers up again. I think, you know, August, we're looking at record numbers potentially for imports.
You know, it's interesting. You know, you were talking about predictions. I mean, we're in the position now. As a matter of fact, I had a conversation, an email exchange with our chief economist, Jack Kleinhans, and this is an ongoing conversation about what we do normally, which is predict or forecast holiday sales the first week of October, which is just around the corner. And I don't think that we're going to do it. Certainly not the first week of October. And if we decide to go forward and do it, I asked Jack if we could just change it from calling it a forecast to an educated guess, because what do you base it on? I mean, you know, the spend has been impacted by, you know, what the Congress has done, the extra $600 and all of these different things that now don't exist. But at the same time, people aren't buying what they used to buy. You know, they're not taking trips. They're not going out for dinner. So there is some income that would normally not be there, you know, going into the holidays. So it's really, really hard to predict. And so I'm assuming that that retailers right now are trying to predict next year, and they're buying, you know, with just kind of like a hope that there's a vaccine and we're going to get back to some modicum of normalcy. Is that what you're hearing?
I think that's the case, but I think, you know, retailers still want to be a little bit cautious. I mean, you know, all the signs are pointing to in the right direction, but there's still the unknowns of what happens. You know, a lot of folks are trying to figure out what happens in the fall when, you know, we start getting into flu season, and how does that impact, you know, the ongoing spread of coronavirus? Do we see that kind of second wave or second surge? And do we end up in some kind of shutdown situation again, which we certainly hope is not the case? I think that's something that, you know, our members certainly have been able to demonstrate, that they're able to operate in a safe and efficient manner for their employees and their customers, which we think is critical. That's why we're trying to push back as much as we can when we're starting to see, you know, certain states and counties want to, you know, shut down again, or, you know, move to further restrictions, which again would significantly hurt the economy once again. But there's just so many unknowns right now, and it's kind of a day by day, week by week that folks are trying to do their plan.
One of the categories that's always important around the holidays, toys. Are you hearing anything specific about the toy category and how it's, you know, and often toys is tied to the big film or the big television show that's coming out, and I don't know that we have that to latch on to this year either. So any thoughts on how toys will fare?
I mean, I think toys are still going to fare well. I mean, obviously toys have done very well throughout the pandemic. I mean, that was, parents spent a lot of, especially parents with young children, I mean, to keep them occupied. And I know I did personally, we bought a bunch of stuff for our kids to try and keep them occupied. But I think toys are still going to be a good category going forwards. Like you said, with toys tied to movies and things like that, I don't know. It's, again, hard to judge what's coming out, how it's coming out. Will movies now be, you know, streamed? We've seen a few movies now that go direct to streaming service that, you know, could help benefit that going forwards. But, you know, I think the toy category certainly will, I think, continue to be a strong category going forwards. I know I plan on spending some money on toys for the holiday season, so I'll do my part.
Way to go,
yeah.
John.
John, you know, what we've seen a lot of, and I'm, you may say, well, not really in this area as much, but we've seen a lot of technologies that have been talked about for a while, and people have said, bah, you know, we'll see that roll out sometime, maybe 2023, 2024, and then the pandemic hits, and it rolls out in a month. I mean, it's just, they're not testing, they're just putting it in and saying this is necessary, this helps the customer, and it helps us get what the customer wants to them in a way that they would like to have it received. So my question is, in inventory or in imports or even in distribution, is there any technology that you've seen that has just kind of like leapt forward and really made a difference during this pandemic?
Nothing that I've seen offhand, but I do know in talking to, you know, a number of our members, I mean, we kind of joke about it, but we've seen kind of 3 years of innovation in three months.
It's amazing.
I mean, folks just really sped up their investment, I think, because they recognized this is something they needed to do. You know, the kind of the investments in technology are always, you know, a nice to have down the road, and it's, you know, that future planning. But I think as we got into the kind of the heart of the crisis here, folks recognized they've got to find a new way to do their business, a way to keep themselves functioning, and a way to reach the customer as quickly as possible. So I think you saw some of those technologies that would have been implemented, you know, in 21, 22, that folks said, it's time to do it now. We've got to do it now in order to keep ourselves moving forward. So a lot of the inventory systems, I mean, you're hearing a lot more about you know, artificial intelligence is coming forwards, the robotics, a lot of that is now being put into place. So it's important that folks now are doing a lot of investing in that IT piece of this. You know, I think that's going to help a lot of the retailers is improve their systems, you know, improve efficiency, improve productivity, and better help the customer at the end of the day.
We always hear the discussion, and it ebbs and flows about made in America. Is the consumer more weary of buying Chinese products? Will they buy more made in America? Will manufacturers try to shift some of their production to U.S.?
Unclear. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of anti-China rhetoric right now, and a lot of that stems just from the political campaign that we're in right now. You know, I think a lot of retailers have tried to shift their supply chains so they're not as dependent upon China. They've been trying to do that for years. The challenge is that just trying to find the capacity that China has somewhere else is extremely difficult. You know, you can go somewhere else in Asia, but it's going to take time, again, to get those factories up and running, make sure they're meeting all of your different requirements for, social compliance matters, make sure they meet all the different health and safety requirements for products based upon U.S. laws. You know, as much as folks would love to come back to the U.S., you can't move everything back to the United States. It's just not possible. You know, there are certain industries that folks just don't want to do here in the United States. A lot of jobs remain unfilled, whether it's things like textiles and apparel, furniture. I mean, those low-end heavy manufacturing jobs that folks just don't want to do anymore, unfortunately. And if some of those jobs are coming back to the United States, they're going to be more in kind of the IT field and more automated than, you know, somebody sitting on a line and stitching a sweater right together. So it's a little bit different of a skill set that you're going to need to bring some of those jobs back here to the United States.
And hence why robotics is suddenly taking off, right?
Yeah. But I think, you know, retailers certainly are looking at continuing to diversify their supply chains, looking at a four-corner strategy. It's not something you can do overnight. You can't just open up a phone book and go, hey, this guy looks good. I'm gonna go with them. There are some real, food. You have to go out, audit the factory, make sure they are who they say they are. They can make what they say they can make. And that's, you know, another thing that's been impacted by the coronavirus is the ability to go out and do your auditing. With all the travel restrictions, you can't go and visit the factories right now. You can do it virtual, but there's a difference between doing it virtual and actually being on the ground and seeing a factory in person.
Of course. Wow.
You literally just answered my next question. I'm sorry. I was going to ask you, we've had the opportunity, I know that you've been several times, I've been a couple of times, to go to factories in China, actually, and see how, the process works. And usually we go along with somebody that's there on behalf of a retailer that's checking their inventory or what they're buying, making sure the colors are right and that the stitching is right and all of the other things they're looking at. And they can't do that right now. So are they just accepting it because they need it, or how are they compensating?
They're still doing that. Obviously, you have some of the auditing firms that have locations internationally that are located within China. So continue to work with those groups. And I think everything else is being done on a virtual basis, the virtual teleconferences to walk through any of the reports and things like that. But it's a challenge, like you noted. It's much easier when you can go in person and see the factory and touch and feel and talk to the workers and things like that. So it certainly is a little more challenging having to do it virtual as opposed to in person.
Is there a COVID learning that supply chain folks are going to take away and keep forever? Like, there's so many things we've put in place because of COVID, but what's going to stick?
I think a lot of the learnings are going to stick. I think the most important learning is that increased communication. I think, for the longest time, supply chain has always been kind of in the background, but now it really is kind of at the forefront of how do you make the operation go. So it's having that strong communication both internally with all the different folks that are needed within the corporate structure, but also with your partners outside. So your vendors, your transportation providers, and others, having that strong communication and talking on a nonstop basis, being quick and nimble and able to respond to any kind of disruption that's going to happen. Because we all know disruption is going to continue. This is a disruption that nobody really kind of thought or had really planned for. You know, we had pandemic issues in the past with the avian flu and things like that, but it hadn't been as severe as we've seen now. So obviously, pandemic planning is going to be a big part of your risk mitigation strategies going forwards. It has to be. So I think a lot of these learnings are going to be, there's some rewriting of how the supply chain operates going forwards, and how that partnership, the nimbleness is really is critical.
We need to know We need to hear communication on where the toilet paper is in the supply chain.
So I was just going to ask that. I mean, that should be number one on the pandemic planning. You know, it was like ensuring that there is enough toilet paper to go around. That was ridiculous.
There were some fascinating articles written about the toilet paper issue, as far as, you know, the toilet paper is made for residential versus commercial. You know, when the economy is shut down, nobody's using toilet paper in a commercial space.
Correct.
So, you know, that was the biggest issue, is you got basically two different markets for toilet paper, and you couldn't shift quickly enough from the commercial space to the residential space.
It was ridiculous.
But I mean, look, let's be honest, there are still ongoing issues with certain necessity issues, certain cleaners that folks are still having
for sure.
trouble getting.
Yeah. You know, I feel kind of stupid, because I actually made the comment to somebody, I was like, I don't understand. Why don't they have enough cleaning fluid? You know, I need stuff to clean my bathroom, and they don't have scrubbing bubbles. And the answer is obvious. And so why did I even ask the question? Which is, you know, there's huge demand for that. You've got to wipe everything down now. Everything has to be sanitized. So, you know, and again, you go to commercial uses and things of that sort. It makes all the sense in the world. Toilet paper, no. Cleaner, yeah, I get that. And the fact that I can't get my favorite carbonated drink, which is Fresca. And for some reason, I don't know exactly who makes Fresca, but they've changed their lines. And so, because of an aluminum shortage, and so they're putting it all towards their best sellers, and Fresca is getting kind of the boot until things get back to normal.
And you know why there's an aluminum shortage, right?
No.
Tariffs.
It always goes back to tariffs, doesn't it, John?
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
We have gotten the high sign, and we're wrapping up on time. But John, you've done this before, so we're going to make you go through it again. I'm sorry. You have to. It's one of the favorite parts of our program, and it's called Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
So as you know, we're going to ask you a question, and you're just going to give us the first thing that comes to mind. So, Susan, start us off.
All right. You go to Jimmy John's and you order a sandwich. Is it a hoagie, a sub, or a hero?
Joe, Jimmy John's. It's a sub. Okay.
Very good. Well, speaking of the food category, what's always in your refrigerator, John Gold? If you say baby food, I'm going to hit you.
tons of vegetables.
Okay. Healthy people. All right.
The one band whose music you'll listen to forever.
Journey.
Oh, that is so cool. What is yours, Susan?
I don't know. It might be the Kinks.
I was, I kind of got on this Eagles kick during the pandemic. I've been listening to the Eagles a lot, and I don't know why, but I'm enjoying it. John, what is your favorite comfort food?
Pizza.
A hint at my favorite would be chocolate chip or mint chocolate chip.
Oh, I love mint chocolate chip. I mean, John, Susan, I'm going out of turn, but do you have something that you have done during this last 6 months of the pandemic that you just wouldn't have thought that you would have been doing during the last 6 months? So, for example, I'll give you my example. I'm eating ice cream like it's going out of style. I'm serious. And since you can only see me from like the neck down, you wouldn't know it. But truly, I've been eating ice cream.
The one thing for being home past 6 months, obviously, is being home with the young kids. You know, I've got, you know, so my daughter just turned one. My son is 1.5 or 2.5.
It's a miracle.
I know. But just to be honest, I mean, being home, seeing them where I wouldn't have been able to, you know, every day and kind of see them grow has been great. Been a challenge, as I've been, you know, stuck in the bedroom at a tiny little desk trying to do work and listening to them run up and down the hallways here. I guess that's the one, you know, positive for, you know, being home the past 6 months.
Absolutely. Susan, close us out.
The last book you read.
Who's got time to read books with two little kids?
Right. Good night, Moon.
Well, what's the last book that you read to the kids?
The last one I read to the kids. Pow Pow Fish. It's a favorite.
Sounds great.
It's a great book. It's a favorite book.
Check out the meme that our former colleague Katie McBreen posted on Twitter, and it said, "Good night, Moon. Good night, Zoom." It's like, oh yes, that's where we're at about now.
It's true. true. Well, John Gold, thank you so much. You are truly one of the best experts in the field, and we're so fortunate not only to have you on the show, but to have you as a colleague and a friend. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And Susan Retta, I always enjoy spending time with you. It's just always a lot of fun. I smile more than I normally do.
Good. It's been a fun time for me as well.
And thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. Now, you can find more information about today's discussion at nrf.com. And please send your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. Thanks for listening. And as we tell you at the end of every show during this pandemic, please be safe and stay well. We'll see you next time.